Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. It has been a crazy couple of weeks for all of us, but certainly a roller coaster of emotions for the Belmont men's basketball team. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring Tyler Scanlon to our microphones now, Belmont men's basketball senior forward. Tyler, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. How you doing?
Doing good. So Joe wrote an interesting piece regarding your basketball team on The Athletic, just talking about the crazy swing in emotions that it's been for you guys, winning the OVC tourney, thinking you're going to the NCAA tournament, and then obviously we all know how much the coronavirus has impacted all of our lives here in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. Just how would you describe this crazy time and kind of the swing of emotions you all have been through as a basketball team?
Yeah, I think that with every day, we've kind of learned new things about ourselves and how much we miss sports. I think that, you know, a week or so ago, we never thought any of this was possible. You know, the NBA started off with the suspension of their season, and then every league followed suit. And then the NCAA progressively went from no fans to canceling the NCAA tournament, to suspending spring sports, and now canceling spring sports. And I think that I don't know if we've ever really had an experience like this where sports have just been taken away completely, at least not in my lifetime. So it's just this has been a learning curve, which I don't know if any of us have really ever seen or been prepared for.
Yeah, well, Tyler, you had a really great post on Twitter about this as well the other day with some of your thoughts, including, you know, talking about how, like a lot of young people in this country, you were in the driveway growing up, you shot the ball, you counted down, you dreamed of playing the NCAA tournament, you earned yourself that opportunity, and then of course it gets taken away, but you're still able to have, you know, perspective on that. You and I were talking the other day a little bit about the Boston Marathon, for example. And of course, you were at Boston University before Belmont. Can take me through that again? Because I was talking to you guys. I'm like, man, these guys are making me feel like, you know, like they've got some perspective on life that we all need. But walk me through your thought process on the Boston Marathon and a little perspective on coronavirus and how kind of earth shaking this is.
Yeah. So the Boston Marathon has been running for the past 124 years. So, you know, through World War One, through the Spanish influenza, through World War Two, it's seen everything, and they've held the Boston Marathon, and now the coronavirus is the obstacle that finally got the Boston Marathon canceled for a year or postponed for a year. So that really put into perspective for me how different this is. This isn't a typical situation. That this is unprecedented, and it kind of helps with, you know, everything being canceled because you know, it's so far out of our hands and so far out of everyone's control that unfortunately sports are not on the table right now. We got a lot bigger things to worry about.
Tyler, from a sports perspective, I mean, the last game you guys played at Belmont this year was that crazy game against Murray State. You scored the game winner there in a back-and-forth game that was extremely entertaining to watch. I'm sure even more entertaining to be a part of. There are worse games to be your last game that you can remember than that Murray State game, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, at least we were afforded the opportunity to play in front of, you know, a packed house. We played in front of fans at that point, where some conferences later did not get to play in front of fans. We got to finish our conference tournament, which a lot of other teams did not get to do. So, you know, if that's my last shot, my last game, you know, I'm okay with it. And it's funny that you pointed out, you know, in the piece that I just kind of wrote, you know, I just felt like people needed to read something from some of the student athletes, because there was so much anger and you know, sadness going on in the community. I just felt like people needed to understand that we got so much as student athletes that, you know, one game or a few games wouldn't define us But I said in the piece that, you know, jump shot after jump shot in the driveway. And it's funny, I went home yesterday and I looked at the hoop, and for the first time I noticed in the bottom left corner of the backboard, it shows where the hoop was made. And it says Evansville, Indiana. And I was like, wow, that is, because that's where the conference championship was played for us.
That's wild.
I was like, huh, that is very eerie. You know, I practiced on this hoop to get ready for the conference championship, you know, 20 years later, and it ended up being the same place. So I don't know. I just thought it was a very strange sign. But, yeah, I mean, I'm really, really glad we got to play that one.
And likely your last basket in organized basketball taking place in Evansville. Tyler, I know we talked about you're keeping your mind open on something like maybe a summer league opportunity, but obviously life is changing a lot of things, including maybe taking away opportunities like that from players coming out of college. Tell the listeners about, you know, what you have going on with grad school, the internship you've had here, and, you know, what you'd like to do with a career.
Yeah, so for grad school, I'm currently pursuing my MBA. And then with that, I'd like to use that MBA to get into sports representation, so be a sports agent or help athletes brand themselves from a marketing perspective with social media and how that stuff is growing. I think there's an opportunity for athletes to, you know, be more than the guy or girl who puts the ball in the hoop and be more of an icon in the community. For my internship, I work at Bros Marketing and Distribution. And within that, we have a program called On the Avenue, where we hire and help work professionalism and you know, develop skills with persons on the autism spectrum, and helping them with audio editing, video editing, how to create a commercial campaign, how to do advertising, marketing. And I think that that's been a really rewarding experience because, you know, it's taught me so much about working with people and knowing that every person has a skill set and has that, you know, that light bulb within them, that if you can just get it going. There's so many hidden talents within people. You just kind of have to take the time to, you know, nurture them and let them grow.
Yeah, that's really cool. We're talking with Tyler Scanlon, outgoing Belmont senior, scored the winning basket to beat Murray State and win the OVC championship for the Bruins. Tyler, I did want to ask you about coming here. You're a grad transfer. We talked the other day a little bit about, you know, you put your name in the transfer portal and boom, the phone starts blowing up. Why Belmont over Wisconsin and George Washington? And what did you learn about Belmont and Casey Alexander in your year playing for the Bruins?
Yeah, I mean, when Coach R first reached out to me in kind of early mid-June, when I put my name in the transfer portal, and I'll be honest, I did not know much about Belmont other than the fact that they almost upset Duke in, I think it was 2008.
Yep.
they're one point away, and I watched that game because I was a huge Duke fan growing up, and I was like, who are these Belmont guys? But, you know, their reputation kind of preceded themselves as being this mid-major power. They look like they played the right way, like a good group of guys. So, I mean, I knew them from that perspective. Beyond that, I didn't know much. And then when it kind of came, I got a couple of weeks to kind of do my research. And it's a trunk process with a lot of time. And I just realized when you take away the names of the schools, what do those schools offer? And then you kind of, you know, what's a Power Five and what has a bigger conference? And you just look at what the schools offer. And it was pretty clear that Belmont offered the best academically and basketball-wise. And then I think once I got here, I realized how much of a program Belmont truly is. Like, there's no bad guys. Everybody's in it together. Everybody's rooting for each other. We just want to win. And that's pretty rare in college basketball. It sounds like very simple. It's like, oh, everybody wants everyone to succeed, and we all want to win the game. But that doesn't always happen. A lot of times there's egos that come into play, and some guys on the team are selfish, and that didn't happen one time during the year, which is incredibly rare.
Well, Tyler, it's been a pleasure to kind of watch your story and the story of your teammates evolve here and the way you guys have handled this situation has been, I think, very inspiring for all of us. So thanks for doing that, and thanks for taking time to come on with us today, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tyler Scanlon, Belmont basketball senior forward, and just a really cool story there, Joe, and how not only he but his teammates as well have handled what's a really tough situation, something you've worked really your whole life for, to get an opportunity to go play in the NCAA tournament. It gets taken away from you, and the perspective they've been able to have in the aftermath of that, I think, has been really, really cool to see, because you don't often find that from college students in that age. Like, the perspective is something I think generally that comes over time and with age, and these guys, they've handled it about as well as you could have asked.
Yep. If you want to feel better, talk to someone from the Belmont basketball program. They've got stuff figured out pretty well over there.
When we come back, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver threw out an interesting idea the other day about potentially having some charity games in the NBA at some point as we're going through this coronavirus crisis. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, we mentioned before the break in the last segment, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver talking about an interesting idea the other day in an interview with ESPN of maybe at some point when, you know, it's allowable and you can get a certain amount of people in a room and in a gym together, maybe having players who are healthy play in these diversion games, these charity games, to give the people something to watch, to give us some entertainment after being cooped up for so long. Here's what Adam Silver had to say in that interview about potentially playing some games for charity purposes down the line here.
And one of the things we've been talking about, are there conditions in which a group of players could compete, you know, and maybe it's for a giant fundraiser or just for the collective good of the people, that you take a subset of players, and is there a protocol in which they can be tested and quarantined or isolated in some way, and then they can compete against each other, just because, again, people are stuck at home, and I think they need a diversion, they need to be entertained. And I just add to that point, one of the thoughts I've heard from, you know, several of our teams, and something I've been thinking about a lot, is, you know, to the extent we were the first to shut our league down, in what way can we be a first mover to help restart the economy? Because, I would just add, is when you think about public health, of course, shutting down the economy, I'm not criticizing the fact that we're doing it right now, I'm following whatever the directives are, but there's no doubt that shutting down the economy is a public health matter as well. I mean, just in the case of the NBA, when you include all our day of game workers in our arenas, just the NBA accounts for roughly 55,000 jobs. And so it's like, I think we all have to be thinking collectively at what the right balance is. And I know, of course, this is the obligation of government officials. When will it be okay to sort of come back out of our homes and say it's time to reengage with each other? And as I said, when I look at the options, maybe we can do this incrementally. The first step isn't games with, you know, thousands of people in the arenas, but maybe it's just games. You know, something I've always said, you know, 99% of people only consume the NBA through some sort of media platform. I mean, it's only a tiny percentage of our fans that actually get to see our games in arenas. So those fans who, you know, watch on television or whatever device they have are fans just in the same way people are in the arena. And maybe even through new kinds of technology, there's ways that fans can be virtual, that they can react to plays on the court and make noise in the arena. I don't know. You know, sometimes out of even the worst crisis comes opportunity.
Really interesting comments there by Adam Silver. And look, I mean, there have continued to be developments in the NBA since that interview on Wednesday. I mentioned yesterday, two members of the Los Angeles Lakers tested positive for the coronavirus. So this is obviously a very fluid situation. But what do we make of the idea of eventually getting to a point, hopefully, where you can get some players back in the building? You can get maybe some games taking place without fans. Maybe not even the count against the schedule. He was just talking about maybe some games for fundraising opportunities there. I think would be interesting to see, you know, maybe not even all a part of the same team, like maybe like LeBron teams up with whoever. I mean, it would just be really interesting. I like kind of the forward thinking and the options and ideas that the NBA is tossing around there.
No, I do too. I think any of it, if any of it has the potential to raise significant money to help people, do it, please. Yeah. I will say that as a consumer, just as someone, if I'm sitting at home, and that's what we're all doing a lot, if I'm sitting at home and let's say I've got a choice between a game like that or like game seven of, you know, the 84 Lakers-Celtics final, I might watch the – I mean, we've been sitting here all day watching my guy Mark the Bird Fidrich in a 76 Yankees-Tigers game, which I loved. Like, I like the classic – game thing. The Preds are replaying games just from this year, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, CBS is churning out all kinds of classic games. I just don't know. I mean, again, if you can raise money through whatever means by doing these games, I'm all for them. I don't know that I would be that interested in watching them. I'll be honest with you. I think I might be more interested in watching classic
games. See,
I can't
do that. I can't watch games I know the score of.
Okay.
I just can't do it. I mean, I there are some, like, you know, I'm a big Miami Heat fan, so if like I flip on NBA TV and like Game 6 of the 2013 Finals is on between the Heat and the Spurs, the game where Ray Allen hits the shot,
yep,
I'll sit there and watch it for a little bit. But like other these like games from like, you know, 1984.
What
and
if
all
you
sort
never
stuff.
Saw them before? Because that's like this, like for example, we were just watching this Yankees Tigers game 76.
Yeah.
I'd never seen it. This is amazing. Like,
it is interesting.
He's talking to the ball. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think recent games that you recently experience, there's a limit to it. But sometimes I think, you know, these games you've heard about, well, you got all the time in the world to watch them. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if they actually came up with these games and they put LeBron and Steph Curry together, whatever it is, maybe I would feel differently. I support them. I'm not like excited about them as a viewer.
As the weeks go on, I would become very excited about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would look, you've got like leagues and teams tweeting out games going on that like there's some NHL teams doing like some NHL 20 simulated games, which I think right now is dumb. But give me about another week and a half, I'm like, yeah, I mean, the Devils are playing the Red Wings tonight on the NHL 20 simulation version. I'm going to watch it. Like that's, I think there's a lot of people who will do that. Jeremy Gover, our good friend, texts in and says, NBA Jam-styled two-on-two tournament.
Ooh.
With the NBA. I would love that. That'd be awesome.
Well, and also, so Ice Cube, I believe, his Big Three League, I think they're trying to do something like this too, right? They're trying to, and of course now, you know, again, that's a lot of like retired guys, still talented players, but it's names you mostly know, but it's like college guys who are good or retired NBA guys, stuff like that. So it's not the same as having current, you know, NBA stars doing something like that. But hey, again, it's something. I mean, I do think that any sort of live competition, and I know for the people out there who gamble, I've heard a lot of, well, never bet on UFC before, but hey,
why not?
You know, I mean, the gambling enthusiast right now. There's got to be some withdrawal going
on. I wonder, maybe it'll break their habit. I don't know. Probably not.
There may be an upside there.
Yeah, maybe so. I do like Adam Silver. You know, he always gets credit for kind of being the commissioner in professional sports that really is forward thinking and comes up with some different ideas. And look, we were even having a conversation before all this coronavirus things or stuff really broke out in our country about the NBA considering, you know, not starting their season until like December and cutting down on the games. And they hadn't made any decisions on that. But I feel like the NBA and Adam Silver specifically are always kind of contemplating these different ideas and the different ways to put their product out there. And I can appreciate that. Like you said, I don't know if like putting one of these charity games together is going to be the most exciting thing. I don't know how much effort will be shown because if I'm the Lakers and LeBron is going out and playing in some random charity game, sure, you would support him doing it, but I'd also be like, how intense is this going to be? Because if he gets hurt, that directly affects my team. Like, there's some of that that's going to go on as well.
Yes.
So that's a part of it where you don't know how entertaining it's going to be from that aspect. But I do appreciate, you know, different options and different ideas being tossed around out there and considered.
Speaking of LeBron, though, LeBron last night, I think for the first time ever, went on live on Instagram. Yeah. And this is how I know we are desperate for sports and desperate for anything related to sports. I was in there for a little bit. I was in bed. I was about to go to sleep anyway, and I was just on my phone. So I was like, I'll check out LeBron's live. A lot of the questions came from Bleacher Report, SportsCenter, ESPN, just asking a question. So what did you think about Pat Riley?
It was borderline pathetic. It really was.
It was pretty sad. Like, I think LeBron wants to talk to his fans. Like, I don't think he came on there to, like, give ESPN or SportsCenter or Bleacher Report overtime, all these websites. Sites just going on there asking LeBron questions.
Yeah, like SportsCenter was like, do you miss Miami? And it's like, what do you think he's going to say to this right now? Like, shut up.
Really? Do you miss Miami?
That's such a waste.
What is your favorite poster, Duck?
And then as soon as he answers, they get the video of it, tweet it out, and then
LeBron James says SportsCenter is the worst in terms of, like, stealing content from LeBron James. Anytime LeBron James says anything, they put this graphic around it. Here's what LeBron had to say about this. It's like, yeah, we get it. All of us follow LeBron on Instagram. We know what he said.
I was enjoying just watching LeBron. I guess he was playing spades with, like, his wife, his mother-in-law, and someone else drinking wine, and like his kids are running around. Like, I enjoy that.
Hey,
he's
an everyday man now.
Leave all of us sports questions away from LeBron James. Let LeBron James live a normal life with his kids and drink wine. He did answer what his favorite wine was. He's actually a pretty smart wine person.
Yeah?
He's actually pretty knowledgeable on wine.
That's why he ended up
in
California.
Wine connoisseur. Okay.
Yes, he is.
Well, speaking of desperation, Blake tweeted, considering people are watching bowling and cup stacking, I think playoff viewership would be at an all-time high. And Nate Moorhead tweeted, you know, what about going to playoffs, you know, without fans?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, absolutely. If you can figure out how to do what they were kind of talking about doing before it all got shut down and do the whole.
Any sports is better than
weird.
No sports.
Yeah. It's weird, but you don't talk about viewership, money. Oh,
I will say this, and this is
huge.
Here's wrestling nerd come out here.
Oh, boy.
Now, wrestling has been doing shows without fans and still wrestling for the most part without fans. And I'm not going to lie. At first, it was really weird watching it because it was like, you know, because wrestling is one of those sports like
you need
fan reaction in wrestling in order for this to work.
Right.
But I watched a show Wednesday from AEW, which is Dusty Rhodes' son's promotion. And they did a really good job because, like, you noticed it, obviously, but it wasn't bad. Like, it was still wrestling. And I think that's what it would be for every other sport. It'll still just be sports.
I think after the first time you saw it, you're like, oh, babe, this is really weird having no fans in stands. And then you'd be like, okay,
They did a show that Friday, and I watched it. And it had, like, three matches where I watched, and I was like, oh, this is kind of just weird. It's a weird feeling. Because then they're also, like, bantering to the crowd. And then when they were doing their promos, they were looking into the crowd. I'm like, no, look into the camera, because all of us are on this side now, not in the crowd. But then, like, obviously, you know, you get growing pains after, you know, week one of doing it, and then you do stuff better the next week. And so it's been pretty good. Like, it's just, like I said, it's just wrestling. You can hear, like, slaps and the mat smashing on the ground, in basketball, you'll be able to hear the court. You'll be able to hear everything.
Every squeak. Yeah. Every little squeak.
Everything they say on there. So, I mean, it was fine to me.
We'll continue this discussion on the other side of the break. Also get into some comments made by Teron Matthew earlier this week. We're still accepting donations for Pencil to Give to the schools that were severely affected by the tornado. To donate, go to give.classy.org/thegame4schools. Again, that's the number 4. give.classy.org/thegame4schools. Our communities are tough, and we will come out of this disaster stronger than ever. We'll be back next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was the conversation on First Take. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman talking there about the running back position in the NFL. Welcome back to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, we've talked all morning long about the running back position, the Todd Gurley situation being released by the Rams, now has since signed with the Atlanta Falcons. And whether or not the Titans made the right decision in placing the franchise tag on Derrick Henry. And to Teron Davenport, who joined us earlier in the show, to his point,
I think we expected the tag to be placed. Now, the tag being placed and operating under the tag and using the tag to continue to negotiate a longer-term deal, those are two separate things. Those are two very different points of the conversation. And I think most of us have just assumed the Titans will continue to work on a longer-term extension and negotiation with Derrick Henry. But there is the possibility that we don't know this, but there is the possibility that this is just the way they're going, and they're going to ride it out under the franchise tag with Derrick Henry for 1 year and then just kind of move on from there. And we don't think that's the case, but we don't know for sure that it's not. I am curious kind of how, you know, John Robinson views the running back position, because, you know, he did have DeMarco Murray, and it was a great trade. It worked out really well. DeMarco Murray with the Titans, it came to an end very quickly here in Nashville. I mean, those skill sets dropped off pretty precipitously with the injuries that he sustained, and all of a sudden, you look around, one day DeMarco Murray's here, he's a starting running back, and the next, he's retired, like he's out of the league. And I wonder how much John Robinson takes that part of it into account as well.
Yeah, well, it did go fast, and it goes fast a lot for running backs. Now, DeMarco Murray, of course, when he came here, he was 28. I thought he was a little bit older than that, but he was 28 when he came here. So, you know, by the time he was done, he was 30. And look, a lot of running backs are done by 30 or earlier. Right now, Derrick Henry is 26. Yep. Just turned 26, so he'll be 26 next season. To me, first of all, no matter what you think, if you're John Robinson, and even if you kind of like the idea of, yeah, tag, prove it, do it again. You're getting paid well. You're getting paid 10 plus. Now let's see it, and then we'll see what happens next year. I mean, I guess I would still at least try to come to the table and do something. I mean, even if it's my preference to not have a long-term deal, I'm not saying like fake negotiate, but you know, if there's no movement in that way, again, I think that is something that I would totally understand Derrick Henry being upset about. But I think that they should earnestly be trying to get a deal done with him. And I'm not saying you know, you go nuts and do, you know, 4 years, $60 million or anything like that. But is there a little bit of a middle ground where Derrick Henry at least doesn't have to know that if he gets his knee blown this year, that he's done and he has no security out of that? And then you don't have to, you know, do something that's obviously right now not working out in the NFL for people who make big deals for running backs. Go ahead.
And no, I was going to bring up the point that, you know, players around the league have been pretty vocal in their support for Derrick Henry in this. And not even just Ryan Tannehill, who's the quarterback. Obviously, he's going to say he thinks Derrick Henry should get a long-term deal. I think everybody on the Titans, as far as the players are concerned, they feel that way. Tyrann Mathieu came out and said, you know, they paid the quarterback, but the running back who made the quarterback's job 75% lighter, he doesn't get any love. It's a cold world. Thank God that man came from a good family. You know, Trent Brown of the Raiders came out and started talking about that as well. So, like, there's a lot of public support around the league in terms of how they view the running back position, how specifically they view Derrick Henry and his workload with the Titans. But to that point, that's what the guys on First Take were talking about too. That's fine. You can feel that way. If you're a team, you understand that, you know, the running back position is probably as devalued as ever. You're probably going to start to see these running backs, you know, once they get into that first, second, third year of their rookie deal. If I'm a running back, I'm going to start holding out. Like, if I'm Derrick Henry, you know, obviously it was a little bit different story with him because it took him longer to get going. He was the backup when he first came in, really didn't reach his full stride until I think four games left in the season 2 years ago and then the full season last year. So his story is a little bit different. But if you're a running back now coming into the NFL and you're very productive in your first year and then very productive again in your second year, I'm holding out at that point. I'm getting paid immediately because the shelf life, it's just not there for running backs now.
That's an interesting thought. It also makes me, like, you look at a guy like Travis Etienne from Clemson who would have gone high and decided to go back to Clemson. Like, if you're a college running back and you have a chance to be drafted, Yeah, go the minute that's possible. Go. Because people, NFL players as it is, you know, Jarrell Casey's 30 and people are talking like he's ancient. And unless you're a quarterback, and again, that's where the quarterback position is just different every way. But unless you're a quarterback, you're considered old when you get to the 30s. And if you're a running back, you're considered old when you get to, you know, 28. So get in and get paid as soon as you possibly can. I like how Teron Davenport put it earlier. You know, everybody wants to take these running back failures and these deals that have blown up and apply them to Derrick Henry. But, you know, think of him as a playmaker. And this is what Le'Veon Bell was trying to say, too, when he was getting tagged and then tagged again. He's like, you know, it's not fair that I would be considered a running back. I'm more than that. And in the Le'Veon Bell's case, he was obviously a big part of their passing game, too. It's, you know, don't, like, running back is like almost, you know, slandering someone now, you know, to be called that. And again, in the Titans specific situation, you can't tell me that Derrick Henry isn't as important as anyone on the team. And that's why I just think it's unfair to him that these other things are counting against him. I get it, but I think it's unfair. And I think all these backs, Freeman, Gurley, Henry last year, they had a massive impact on the success of their teams. And when things fell off, funny how their teams also fell off.
Teron Matthew discussed the comments that he made on Twitter about Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill from earlier this week. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's frustrating, you know, especially, you know, from a player perspective. You know, I've had the opportunity to actually play against, you know, both of those guys, actually. And in my opinion, you know, I feel like Tennessee really leaned on Derrick Henry. They didn't necessarily lean on Ryan Tannehill. Although Ryan Tannehill stepped up in some big moments and had some big games for them, I feel like Derrick Henry was really their personality. He was their attitude, and he was really their morale, you know, a lot of the times throughout the season. So, you know, to see a guy like that kind of get pushed to the side, is definitely frustrating for a player.
And I think a lot of players feel that way. But unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast. Quarterback versus running back. Most times, quarterback's going to win that battle.
Well, but it's also an uninformed view of Tannehill that I think everyone around this league who didn't watch the Titans week after week kind of has that. Yeah, Tannehill did. No, go back and look at, again, look at when Henry didn't play against the Saints, and they probably win if not for that, or they might win if not for that late Khalif Raymond fumble. That was Tannehill going blow for blow with Drew Brees. So it's understating the importance of Tannehill. And again, if you want to look at Henry's numbers pre and post Tannehill, they are massively different.
Much so different.
It's not to say it was all, you know, Henry and he dragged Tannehill along. No, that's not true. It really was a partnership. Again, it's a partnership that, to me, I'm signing up for at least a couple of years if I can get it.
Absolutely. When we come back tomorrow, we're going to be replaying the Predators sweeping of the Chicago Blackhawks from the 2017 playoffs. What do we remember the most about that series? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic here on a grayish, at least it's not raining anymore, Friday.
Warm.
It is warm. It's not going to be warm for the rest of the day.
Is that right? It's going down?
It's going down. Going down to like 40 degrees later. Gonna have to turn the heat back on.
Oh, I'm sorry that I even brought it up.
I know. Now I'm depressed.
So it's basically like if it's gonna be warm, we'll get precipitation, and if it's gonna dry off, it'll get cold.
Get cold again.
Okay. All right.
We're in that time of the year. It's fun.
Yeah.
Although I do think next Thursday in the extended forecast of the Weather Channel. Now again, we know how accurate this could be, but I think next Thursday it was supposed to be like 70. Yeah, next Thursday, 78 and sunny, which I will sign up for that all day, buddy.
Okay. Yeah, we'll take that.
Now, that's a long way away. We're talking about 6 days away, and we know how these extended forecasts can get sometimes.
That's also supposed to be the first day of the Sweet 16, but I'm trying to keep myself from...
I'm trying to talk about sunshine.
Yeah.
And positive things.
Sorry. The second day games are about to start in about an hour.
Yeah, well... Missing out on a fun time of year, my friend. Missing out on a fun time of year.
Let's just hope we get something
We need something that we know at some point we can look forward to.
Yeah.
And a date.
Absolutely. We're going to be doing something cool here starting tomorrow on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When we did it last night, I think it was game four of the 2016 series against the San Jose Sharks, where Mike Fisher scores the overtime winner that in a game where it was like 1:03 in the morning. God, I ate so many sandwiches in that game. Like, we kept going. They kept serving sandwiches in between the overtimes of that game. And I was just like, well, yep, why not? I'll take another one. It's 12 o'clock in the morning. I've had three sandwiches. I'll just keep going.
That was my first week in Nashville at the
really?
Tennessean. And I didn't even know where the sandwiches were at that point. I was just sitting up there on press row.
I took them all anyway.
Let me tell you, man, that was...
Didn't have anything left for you.
That series against the Ducks, and my first game was the game... would it have been four? No, it was six.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the Sharks series.
Yeah.
Yes. So my first game was game six against the Ducks, then the Sharks series. I mean, those first few... You know,
came
introductions
right into the fire,
to
man.
Bridge to all. Now, first of all, yeah, obviously clueless. Hey, why don't you write a column about this? Yeah, this will be really good. But just amazing, amazing like atmosphere and, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs covering it. Had never done that. Awesome, yeah. Man. Awesome.
I think we're going to be playing the Blackhawks series tomorrow starting at 1 o'clock, the sweep of the Blackhawks in 2017. And, Joe, that was an amazing series from the standpoint of, look, let's be honest. I picked the Blackhawks to win. I think pretty much everybody picked the Blackhawks to win other than Darren McFarland and Willie Donick, who remind me of that very often. But I think just watching that series unfold, I think I was in here for game one doing like post game with Darren. He was in Chicago, and I was kind of remotely helping him out from here in the studio. And they won that game one, and it kind of felt like they were hanging on at the end. You're like, okay. Well, Pecorino's stolen one in Chicago.
Exactly.
They've gotten one. The Blackhawks are going to come out next game with a vengeance to them. They'll tie it up, but at least you're coming back to Nashville 1-1. And then the Predators just blew the doors off of the Blackhawks in game two, and that was the first time where I was like, uh-oh. I mean, this could be real here. And then, of course, you know, game three, it's back and forth. I think they were down 2-0 in that game. You come back.
Forsberg had a huge goal late.
Yeah.
Johansson, Fiala had a
Fiala wins it in OT.
Yeah.
And as soon as it was up 3-0, I could tell by being in the locker room that night, the look on the Blackhawks' face, they were done.
Yeah.
And they knew they were done. And it was amazing to just watch this unfold. And then, of course, they finished it off in game four. And look, a lot of crazy things happened in the run that year. You know, the game six against Anaheim, where they punched their ticket to the Cup final, was still, I think, one of the most incredible nights I've ever seen.
Yep.
The Cup final itself was memorable. Those home games against Pittsburgh were awesome. I'm not sure there's ever been an environment quite like that Game 4 sweep of Chicago finishing the job. That environment and the aftermath of that, I mean, Predators fans were all over the place. They would not leave that arena or the Plaza. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because I still think of the Cup final, and some of it is outside the arena because obviously it's just an incredible, you know, amount of bodies very close together, by the way. You think of things differently now, don't you?
But, you really do.
You know, but I mean, I still think of those atmospheres, those, especially, you know, 3 and 4, they won those games as like the standard. But you may be right. You know, actually taking care of the Blackhawks may have been as good as it got. I mean, you know, those timeouts and everything, the whole thing was just crazy. I'll never forget game two in Chicago. Like you said, that's where, because you steal game one. Hey, good job. You stole game one and, you know, nice pat on the back. And maybe you can make this more of a series than we thought. But when game two started to get away, you're like, whoa. And I'll never forget Pete Weber, the great Pete Weber. And I'm trying to remember when this, it might have been right after the game or maybe between the second, third periods. I saw him in the press box. He's like, something for your column. Doc Emmerich came into the booth and said, so how do you pronounce this Zolnarczyk guy? How do you pronounce it? Because, of course, he scored in that game.
He did.
Harry Zolnarczyk.
Big Harry Zolnarczyk.
And I was like, Pete, you just made my lead, buddy.
Yep.
Thank you so much. I still owe him like a steak dinner or something for that. But like stuff like that is just awesome. Like the whole country's like, wait, who are these guys?
Yeah.
And who is that guy? And that was when you did have a feeling like, uh-oh, this could be – little more than just pat on the back and, you know, consolation prize.
And that was the series that everybody looks at Ryan Johansson and they're like, that's the guy we want. That's the guy that we need to have as the number one center here in Nashville, because he was dominant from the word go in that series against Jonathan Toews. I mean, he was great that old playoff run. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he was great against St. Louis, was great against the Ducks before he got hurt. That series he had against the Blackhawks, that was as well as I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
He was so good in that series.
Right. That's the standard that he'll continue to get compared to, you know, as he continues to play with the Predators.
Yeah. And that series in general, I mean, I was there when the Preds beat the Red Wings in 2012 to kind of slay the giant they'd been chasing for so long. There was a similar feeling in 2017. They've been kind of chasing after Chicago and chasing and chasing, and finally they were able to get there. They lost in 2010. They lost in 2015. And they finally broke that door down in 2017. And as we know, Chicago really hasn't been the same since. It's been kind of the line of demarcation for their franchise, too, in terms of the different transition they've had with the Blackhawks. So it's been interesting to follow kind of the trajectories of how both teams have gone since then.
Well, Ryan Porth did bring up the, because obviously this week we kind of give the Titans actual final credit for killing the Patriots dynasty, because it is over.
It is over.
And, you know, you can give the Preds credit for killing the Blackhawks dynasty.
Yeah.
And so Nashville now just needs to come up with one of its own.
Yes, that's the next step.
A lot of Red Wing slander today, by the way, I've noticed on the show. And Craig Cousins,
that's what we're here for.
What's that?
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, my athletic colleague and actually college buddy, Craig Cousins, has watching Game 7 of the 2009 Stanley Cup Finals between the Wings and Penguins that he just put up at theathletic.com. Which I was in Pittsburgh that night, by the way, with drunken Pens fans. Anyway, Detroit sports, they stink.
Yes, they do. Red Wings getting a lot of love today. That's going to do it for us today here on the show. We'll be back on Monday at 6 o'clock to break down everything that happened over the weekend. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.